Well, welcome to the D&K Riposte Non-League Show. And of course, we're here every Monday evening. And of course, joining me as usual on this special evening is, of course, the one and only Mr. Keeper Mine. And how you been, mate?
Yep, not too bad, Dave, thank you. Yep, normal week, plodding on.
Good. And of course, the living legend in the just below me on the screen, of course, is Mr. Lawrence Jones. And great to see you, sir, and fantastic to have you on.
Hi, David. I've never been called a legend before, but thank you for that.
And unfortunately, tonight, I won't go into it too much, but unfortunately, of course, Mr. Anthony Hughes is unavailable this evening to join us, which we send him all our very, very best tonight, and hopefully we'll speak to him very, 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 very soon. But it's been one of those, another one of those sort of weeks. There's been plenty of stuff, and of course, through social media, non-league wise, there's been a few more sort of issues of issues with crowds, bits and bobs. There's been issues again with people talking about which league they're being in and which league they're not being in. And Keith, before we go to Lawrence, and Lawrence can explain his job role for us at the FA and so forth. I mean, do you not feel that Lawrence and his team have got a near impossible job?
Of course you have, Dave, because obviously, you know, the way the country is, and every year it changes. If we didn't have a pyramid and people went up and down, then it would be easy, wouldn't it? But, you know, all it needs is the teams like Wroxham and, like you said, Gorson and whatever from the Eastern League to get promoted, and then that causes an issue over in that half of the division. And then, you know, you've got all the teams down in the southwest as well. It is tough, but you're always going to have one or two teams, or in this case it's more of 10 to 15 teams now across the whole pyramid that is not ideal for. But that's you know, we seem to be popping up with so many teams, especially sort of, I'd say, south, down south, if you split the country in half, that are really sort of climbing the pyramid and want to do that, and we're being overloaded with teams. The FA's done their best to try and now sort of round it off in numbers for the leagues, which seems hopefully will help Lawrence's job a little bit easier going forward. But I'm sure that, you know, it could be next year that you could lose four teams all from that area, and then everyone's moving about again. So it's a bit like the old-fashioned Mike Reid runaround, isn't it?
And it is that sort of thing, Lawrence, before we get you to describe your job and your job title in your face, is, you know, I suppose the two that sort of stick to mind this year from what, you know, Anthony had said to us in previous time he'd been on was the likes of I think it's Highworth Town and Cirencester, that they were just sort of unlucky that there was a lot of teams promoted in that area or relegated in their so-called area, which then meant they had to be shifted sideways, which then put them in a league which wasn't necessarily kind to them, shall we say, with travelling wise. But it's not something that you look at and think, well, look, you know, okay, what we'll do next year then is we'll put 22 in one league and leave 18 in the other league to make it easier for them, because that just wouldn't work either, would it?
No, I think that there are a number of parameters, and it is complicated. I don't think we can hide from that because of the landscape of England. If England was a different shape, it might be a bit easier. I mean, I think the starting point is that, you know, the National League system is a pyramid that enabled clubs to go from the local parks through to the EFL, and it is one of the golden nuggets of English football. The fact that we've now managed to, you know, have a pyramid in place that provides promotion and relegation all the way through from step six through to step one and into the EFL. It's very precious to football in this country, particularly when you recognise that the clubs really are the focal point of their local communities. I think we sometimes underestimate the role clubs in the National League system really play in their communities, not just in providing both National League system football, but huge grassroots tales, but also other roles they play working in their community. I always say we could sit down, the three of us tonight, you know, and we could design absolutely the perfect model where all 960 clubs, or however many it is, are absolutely happy where they are, what they're doing. What we can't legislate for is promotion and relegation, because within one season it would totally change that. We genuinely try really hard to keep lateral movements to a minimum. It's inevitable there's going to be some every season. And it's inevitable that, unfortunately, some clubs, you know, perhaps will end up on the wrong side of a line. And however hard we try, and it's not done manually. It is quite scientific in terms of mileages, club clusters, and taking things like that into account. But the reality is, however hard we try, that there will always be some losers, I guess, in the eyes of the clubs as to where they're based.
So, I mean, for people that don't know, Lawrence, I mean, what is literally your job title in the FA, and explain a little bit about the job role that you do.
Okay, I mean, my job title is I'm head of the National League system. I work with a couple of names people may or may not know: Matt Edkins, who looks after steps 1 to 4, and James Earl, who looks after steps 5 and 6. We sit in the football operations division at Wembley. Our role is to support the leagues and the clubs in the National League system. It's to ensure that the regulations are followed. The way this level of the game operates is the FA Alliance Committee looks after steps 1 to 4, and the Leagues Committee look after steps 5 and below. And so we're the executive to those committee, and it's the committees ultimately that make decisions. And I think what we've tried very hard to do, I've been in post in this post since 2015, and took over from the late Mike Appleby, which is big shoes to fill in terms of Mike. It is to try and firstly get the pyramid in place, and I think we've done that. We couldn't legislate for COVID coming along in the middle of it, which was quite a challenge for a game. And as we all saw, it was a pretty stressful and hectic couple of years for football. The positive thing is, I think the National League system came out of COVID in a really strong position. Thanks to funding from government, from the Premier League, from the Football Foundation, they've come out, and many clubs came out in a better financial position. Perhaps they went into COVID, if we're truthful about it. So, but our role very much is to live, breathe, and eat National League system football 7 days a week, and that's very much what we do. I see my role not just to represent the FA with the National League system leagues and clubs, is to represent the National League system leagues and clubs back into the FA. I'm pretty passionate about the National League system. I said in my opening, I think the pyramid of football we have at this level of the game is truly amazing. Over 4 million people watched National League system football last year. I think that's a big number. Wow. And the role that the volunteers undertake to ensure that this level of the game operates to the high standards that it does is truly remarkable. And it's something that football in this country should be very proud of.
Mm. I mean, you were saying earlier on, I mean, I'd be very interested to know, so how sort of long into the season? I mean, are you already sort of starting to look at it if there's a couple of clubs that are running away with leagues or whatever else? When's the sort of first time you would start looking, and that's going to sound, it might sound a bit of a silly question, but when would you start looking at where people might be placed, say, for next season? Do you physically wait until the season's over, or have you got like a bit of a pen and paper down, or whoever's sorting out going, well, if that happens, they could go there? Have you got some sort of a template that you're working on before the season finishes, or is it waiting until the playoffs are done and dusted and then you start sorting it out from there?
Well, we normally wait until the predicted constitutions appear on social media, actually. and then that gives us a nudge that, well, perhaps we'll have a look at it as well. No, we normally look, I mean, we normally start looking round about. We might do a first preliminary look round about the end of February. Yeah. I mean, there's really no point doing anything for them, to be truthful. And that's just really to get a feel for how things might turn out, because we're under quite a bit of pressure to turn around the constitutions very quickly at the end of the season. Mm. Because we bear in mind, it's a sort of a knock-on effect all the way through the pyramid, and we need to get the constitutions in place, by the time the leagues have their AGM, so that the leagues can ratify the constitutions. We have to make allowances for appeals, and so from the time that the last ball is kicked of the season to getting the constitutions out, I think this year we turned it around in I think it's some remarkable about 2 weeks. I think it might have been 3 weeks, but it was a pretty quick turnaround this year. And that because it's important that clubs get a chance to consider if they wish to go down the appeal process, because they don't like the league they've been placed in terms of geography. They have time to do it, and we're working to that really tight window, because most leagues will be having their AGMs at during June, and with the season kicking off again in August. So it's a really tight timeline for us.
Do you ever get to that stage though? When you see certain teams and maybe you're looking at sort of step four or whatever else, or step five, and you're looking at it and you think, Struth, please come on, hurry up. We don't want everybody from Kent getting promoted, or we don't want everybody from Essex getting promoted, or whatever else. You want a sort of a bit of a split, so it makes it a little bit easier for you. But when you see like a group from one sort of area of the country, all sort of, are we going to get relegated or promoted and going into that same sort of step? Does that when you start thinking, this is going to be a tough one again?
I think we probably take the view that if there is a large cluster coming from one area, we know what the output's going to be. It's going to end up resulting possibly in some natural moves, but not really. No, we listen. I think we treat it pretty black and white, to be truthful, in terms of how it looks and how it comes out. You can't predict what the end of the season tables are going to look like. And once we have the end of season tables, we then get down to the serious business of putting it into the mixer and see what the computer throws out.
Yeah, I mean, do you get many sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Do you get many sort of people writing in, not necessarily with complaints, but with saying, look, I don't want to be in that league. I'm trying to think of the word, and it's going to be
objections.
Yeah, do you get many objections? I mean, have they eased as the years have gone on, or have they got?
It was interesting last year. I think we had our lowest number of appeals last year. I mean, I can think when I first came into post, we'd have double-digit appeals, and it was quite complicated. I have to say, last season we had probably the smallest number of appeals in the 7 years I've been doing the job, and I think that sort of indicates that in the pyramid it's working for most clubs in the main. There will always be one or two where it doesn't work for a season, but of course it is a 12-month contract, so it can change. And I think the one thing the pyramid has brought is allowing for seasonal variation that does happen. It actually provides a greater level of stability for the clubs.
If you had anyone, Lawrence, that's properly thrown their toys out the pram over the 7 years and gone, no, we're not going to move, and things like that, if someone's took it to the maximum they could take it?
No, most anyone's taken clearly we've had appeals in that time, but no one's gone beyond the appeal process. We certainly, only last week I went and visited the club in Berkshire, Berks and Bucks, who, play at step six. We are a bit concerned with step six at the moment. I think there are some, for some clubs, there are some long mileages, and, I'm working with the league's committee to see what we can do, if there's anything we can do looking into the future to try and, address that issue. Because the one thing I'd like to think the FA is, and I certainly am, is open-minded on these things. If there is an issue, because sometimes you do things, or sometimes, things work against you, and you just take a step back. And it's, I'm certainly not, I'm very happy to go and meet clubs and talk to clubs. We can't solve every individual problem. It's impossible.
And obviously, with the restructuring of the league over the years by the FA, sort of with more step six, more step fives, more step fours, obviously that's only going to cause you more headaches, aren't you? Because, like you said, you're getting now, I know you've got more leagues, but you're getting more teams from different areas getting promoted or relegated all the time.
Yeah, well, looking at the trajectories, I mean, I think at step six has been a bit of a northward shift. And I think we have to look at the impact of that. I think certainly those who are clubs playing in the Spartan South Midlands League and around that area have sort of moved up into that reach has got further, and the same for the UCL. The UCL gone a bit further north as well. So I think we need to that's something the league's committee are looking at, and quite rightly so. We've also seen a trajectory with a growth in the southwest. There's more clubs in the southwest. But at the end of the day, we are a national league system, and I think it would be absolutely wrong to, you know, because, you know, to stop clubs being part of the national league system because of where they live. That can't be right either.
Sometimes I think, you know, I sometimes when I see sort of social media messages on there and people complaining about the league they're in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes it's because, I know it might sound really, really simple, but sometimes it's people just don't like change. If you know what I'm trying to say, when people have been in a league that maybe have been in a league for a long, long time, you know, they might have been in, say, the Southern League, and now with somebody being moved to the Northern League, or were in the Eastman League, being moved to the Southern, or was in the Southern into the Northern. But, you know, they've been in that league for a long period of time, and now all of a sudden they're having to find their feet in a different league completely, not just a different division, but a different league. Sometimes it takes a little bit of like, well, we've got to get used to this rather than it's not the norm of playing the same old teams week in, week out.
I think that's partly true. I think it's changing. I don't think it's quite so prevalent now, because I think there's a wider acceptance across the National League system that, you know, it is a 12-month contract, and depending on how things shank down, depends which league you're going to be in. I think certainly that would be true going back a couple of years. There was a resistance because people, you know, football doesn't like change very much anyway. You know, it's football is quite a creature of habit, and you know, and you know, clubs do get comfy by, you know, being in one competition. You know, it's they know how the competition works, and it's, you know, it's quite comfy. But I think there's a greater acceptance these days that it is a 12-month contract in the leagues, and you know, and I said where we can, unless a club is promoted or relegated. We try and keep lateral movements to the south, so to the minimum. So the core is hopefully, you know, stays in the league, but it is a 12-month contract.
Do you look at things like that though, Lawrence? Because basically, you know, you're right. 90% of the sides basically know what league they would go in, because like, down in the southeast, as you said, we've got a funny size cup, like the shape of the country. But everyone in Kent and borderline Essex will know that they will go in the Eastman Southeast or the Eastman Premier League and so on. But there are a couple that sort of sometimes nearly every year sitting there going, I don't know what we're going to be in. It could be in the Southern, we could be in the Eastern, we could be, because they're stuck in the middle. Do you, if when you've got a club like that, just say for instance, we look at Waltham Abbey, I'm just picking them up because they're in that league. We call it the Jigsaw League, me and Dave, that get thrown into the Southern, the South, Eastern South League. But, you know, do you look at them and go, look, hold on, we've got to give them some sort of stability for a little while, because it is difficult on them where they're trying to change different players, different things, you know. Right. So you bed down, you can only keep doing your homework on teams. It's a bit unfair on them that they have to change every year. Do you look at it that way and go, look, we've got to sort of at least give them a few years here to do that? Or is it just, you know, it just depends on who gets relegated or promoted?
Yeah, I'm sure I stand to get shot down, but we genuinely try really hard not to laterally move a club year on year on year. That's because for the very reasons you said, we want to try and give that club stability. Sometimes factors do work against us. You know, we can't control that, but that is one of our considerations. If a club has been laterally moved, we will do our very best not to move them year on year.
Because basically, the teams that get promoted, just say from step 5 into step 4, you know, they really sort of care what league they go in. They've just got the info that if you're well, we've been promoted, so we'll take any league. The teams that get relegated, maybe it's the other way, isn't it? They sort of go, well, you know, we'd rather go in there. Is that what you find a little bit more?
Well, that never really gets through to us. I'm sure the clubs have I think all clubs have a view as to, you know, which is their preferred competition, probably. But that never, to be honest, that never really comes through to us. We're a bit remote from that, and quite rightly so, in my opinion.
Well, I did put it on a post out not so long ago, a week or so ago, and I did a little bit of homework from my base, and we spoke about it before we went on air, but I had a quick shifty, so I moved from where I am to every single team in the Eastman North, Eastman Central, and the Southern League Central, just to see how you know, the travelling would be, just to do a bit of homework, because I knew you was coming on as well, just to see whether or not, you know, some people said we're in the wrong league, we're not in the wrong, we're in the right league, et cetera, et cetera. And so we had a look. And so from my house to all the teams that are in the Southern League Central Division, from my house to that ground is 788 miles and 788 miles back to my house. The Isthmian North, which is, you know, a lot of clubs, especially around this area, that got moved when the big move happened just recently, the likes of the Harlows, the Waltham Abbeys, Hertford Town, Ware, et cetera, FC Romania got shifted to the, from the, I think from out of the North Stroke Central into the Southern League. But the Isthmian North is 1,001 miles travel from my front door to the grounds and from those grounds back to my house. And the Isthmian South Central, which of course was where most of those clubs were previously, is 1,211 miles to the grounds and 1,211 miles back. But that also includes a trip over to Guernsey by plane. So on those facts, you got it right.
That's good.
got most of it right, Dave. Like you said, he can't get it all. Put it this way, and I'll give you a prime example. And Lawrence, I'm not here to shoot you down. I went and watched VCD on Saturday, who played Chichester. Now, if you look at the leagues, Chichester drove past maybe about five grounds that are either in the Southern League or in the Eastern and South Central. So you could say, well, Bognor were one. We know our mate Jack. So there are the odd occasion, but if you put it from their address, Dave, and then done in the other way, I think, I know where you are, you're sort of quite central, but I remember when I was at Thamesmead and VCD, we played in the north when there was no southeast. You know, I remember us having to go to Lowestoft and Wroxham and, you know, Needham Markets. It didn't really bother us too much. I actually quite enjoyed it, to be
fair.
I mean,
those figures are in the
maybe comp- because we got promoted out of it, but
in all fairness, those figures are in the context of the likes of those teams that moved over from there.
Of course.
Surely everybody.
I think also you have to say, I mean, the Southeast is complicated because of travelling time. You know, there's two sides of it. There's physical mileage. So, you know, if you're in the Southwest, you know, you've got, you know, quite a long journey, but they're journeys you can do reasonably quickly. The same sort of, you know, if you go to sort of London and the Southeast, you know, it could take you just as long to travel some of those 12 or 15 or 20 miles as it does to do 70 or 80 miles somewhere else, doesn't it? You know, so.
100%. I think also that the times of now of the teams like this side of the water that, well, Sam, when I was at Thames and VCD and that, going back over to the north, because I think, Dave, you mentioned this time, well, last year, didn't you, that you thought a couple of teams might change and it might get shaken up. I think it's truly stopped because, you know, you can even put the Dartford Bridge or the tunnel in the equation, and that can add two hours. You know, you'd be getting postponements nearly every other week.
Yeah, definitely. It's, and, you know, we do have to look at that. It's one of the things we do look at. Yeah, we don't. It's there are different parameters to where you might be in the country. The M62 can be a nightmare in the northwest, going across, you know, west to east or east to west. That can be a real problem.
And when Keith keeps climbing that bridge, it don't help.
Scared of heights, Dave.
So, I mean, if he was looking at it though now, I mean, you know, with the system itself, I mean, what sort of leagues, you know, that you look after, you know, I think if you said step three, step four, is the ones that you look at and think that needs a little bit of tweaking more than the rest? Is there one there that needs a little bit more tweaking?
I think I've said earlier on, I think the area we need to look at probably next is step six. I think we do need just to revisit that to see if there's any way we can. Step six is complicated because, you know, quite reasonably, the clubs, you know, they don't want excessive journeys. You know, it's, and I get that. The landscape is fine in some areas. The clusters are right, and in other parts of the country, and certainly that sort of middle band through the Chiltern, sort of going west across to east, there you get clusters of clubs, and then you get quite large swathes of no clubs at all, and it can be quite complicated trying to get, you know, get the right model there. So I think step six is where the attention is at the moment. We know we've been working with the Western League and the Southwest Peninsula League to look at a more creative solution in the southwest corner. And I think the takeaway message from that is that, you know, if there is, you know, genuine need and genuine concern on a regular basis, we will be adaptable. We will look to try and explore creative solutions to it.
I was going to say that to you. You mentioned the southwest corner because, you know, I'm not as sort of familiar with it down there, but it does seem that there's not as many teams down that end. Am I rightly saying? Compared to maybe other, well, I know, you know where we are in London and South East and Essex, there's loads, but it just seemed that if you've done the mileage, Dave, like you did, you might end up doing a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, the current structure is there's one step five and two step six from memory. And I think we're going to end up going to, you know, it's one step five, three step six, and we're going to end up going to two step five and three step six. It won't change number of promotion positions. It'll certainly be going the same number going up now, but we're going to sort of, and we're doing it to try and ease the travel because there's more and more clubs in Cornwall wanting to be at step five. And the Western League, which is the step five competition at the moment, is, you know, is primarily Bristol based. So that's quite a big hike from Bristol down to, you know, the Southwest Peninsula. Mm. So it's trying to find a creative framework. I mean, steps one to four, in the one to three certainly really sort themselves out. You know, you've got one division at one, you've got two at two, you've got four at three. Step four is pretty well the same as well. It's when you start getting into, you know, there's 16 divisions at five and 17 at six, that's when it gets a bit more complicated. And the clubs and the players don't want that level of travelling, if we're honest about it.
So, I mean, with the leagues that we sort of deal with more than anything else, I suppose, with the Southern League, the Isthmian League, the Northern League, if you come to them and say, look, there you go, there's your constitution for your league, do they get any say? I know they're on the board, you know, they're on that sort of board as well, likes of Anthony and Nick and that as well. But, I mean, how much say do the three representatives their constitution is?
I mean, the way the FA, you know, works by committee, and ultimately it is the steps one to four, it is the Alliance Committee that ratify the allocations, and then it goes to full, and it's the Leagues Committee who ratify steps five to six, and then it goes to full council to the formal ratification. That's the way the FA works. You know, the leagues are the leagues are consulted, the league representatives on the allocations, But yeah, you know, and because they might have some local knowledge we don't have, but it's very rare the allocations get, you know, revised at all once they're presented.
I just had that feeling of you going in there shaking, thinking, please, you know, please say yes to this because I don't want to have to sit there and have to work it all out again.
I got to the age where I stopped. I don't worry me now.
But that must be an interesting meeting to be sitting in, though. You know what I mean? When it comes to that, when all of a sudden, especially recently, when it was quite a big shake up. You know, the likes of
Southampton. As I said to you, Dave, I said this to you before. It could be quite funny. It's not, and I know Lawrence is going to tell us it's not, but it could be like a game of top trumps, couldn't it? You're all sitting there with your cards, and you go, right, I'll trade my one for Mabby for your FC Romania. FC Romania have got like X amount of this and that, and you have a little shuffle up every year and have a deal and have a, see which seven cards you get.
Yeah, no, it's not. I can assure you, it's nowhere near as exciting as that.
But does it also get a little bit? You know, I mean, I know a few years ago, I think it was a couple of years ago, I know the thing got caught up where Romford went in to play with Barking, you know, play at Barking, but they're in completely different leagues. At the same step, but in two different leagues. So does that also get very difficult when you've got a team, shall we say, like a nomad team, a bit like, and we'll use Romford as an example for the time being, and, you know, the likes of Kingstone and these type of people where they seem to change their, you know, where they're playing quite regularly. Does that also then, you know, especially if it's like a step four team, that could also affect where you put them as well? Because I think it's the same for Cowell Hamlin.
It's difficult to be precise on that, but it has the potential to. I mean, ground shares are complicated. We know that. And, you know, and probably the southeast of the country is the most prevalent area for ground shares. And so it can be an added complication. We try and make sure it's not, but it can be.
It's just interesting though, Cleve, isn't it? Because I mean, you could, you know, by just by you, I wonder when teams, when they do the ground sharing, if they actually think about that before they go into it. Could you look at that, you know, as a ground share and think to yourself, well, hang on a minute, if we go and share, we've shared with Barking this year, so we was in the, you know, in the East Mid North. So, for instance, if they were still in that, you know, still at that step, but we feel that maybe the Southern side, so it might be a little bit easier for us if we share with them.
I'll give you a prime example, Dave, who did do that. At step five last year was Tower Hamlets. Mm-hmm. They come over from the Essex, ground shared with Phoenix, so they could go in the Skeffel League. And obviously now they've finished bottom of that and gone back up to Mile End and gone back in the whatever the step six league is. For me, again, we're going off the subject a bit. For me, ground sharing is coming a little bit too more common now, and it's a little bit, I don't know, it seems to be not an easy way to stay in a pyramid. Or I know you can't get ground share to get promoted straight away, but and I know clubs are losing, you know, people like Romford's and Grays that are desperate to get their grounds, but there's also quite a lot of clubs that seem to be quite happy not having the expense of having a ground and just paying here and there and continuing being like a nomad. And it is sad when you see some of the big clubs like your Kingstonians and that losing their grounds. But for me, surely, and I'm maybe talking out of turn, and I don't just mean Kingstonians, some just seem to be quite happy to do that.
I think what worries, I mean, my concern is, I mean, one of the areas we're looking at is to support our clubs develop, and, you know, probably some light touch business transformation, because they're all businesses in their own right. My concern in ground shares is the long term sustainability of the clubs. You know, now every agreement's different, but you know, I think you know, for some clubs, and you know, it's all payout, where they're getting their income from. You know, it's how long can that be sustained? That's the worry about for me with ground shares. I'm sympathetic in the southeast, particularly because of, you know, green spaces are very difficult to come across, aren't they? Let's be honest about it. But I do worry about the long term sustainability of clubs in ground.
And that's why I also thought, going back, and it's a shame that Nick and Andy obviously couldn't come tonight. But going back years, you used to have an X amount of year ground share, because I remember when obviously we was at Thamesmead and we'd done it, but now it seems to be a lot less, like 12 months or something. And and again, it's, you know, you can keep changing, and I think for the stability of that, I think that needs to show. I understand the pluses of only having 12 months is that teams don't get on, etc., or they haven't got the money. But for the actual, you know, and easy for your job as well, if you knew they were always going to be there, it's pretty easy. But it seems like teams can hop to and from grounds whenever they want at the moment.
Yeah, it is something that's probably on our radar. I don't see any short-term changes to the regulations, but it's something it is around the sustainability of the clubs the greatest level of concern is ground shares. Now, some ground share agreements are very, very good, and they work very well, but there are others that, you know, probably are not sustainable.
I mean, I know one of the other things when we sort of spoke by email, Lawrence, you said you'd like to talk about as well, was, you know, just moving on a little bit, he's this sort of growing concerns, you know, especially over the last couple of years or so, since sort of COVID and just, you know, into that sort of COVID era, is that, you know, the sort of behaviours in the game, because it's all of a sudden it seems to be, you know, when I first started in non-league football, you never heard anything of it at all, or very rarely heard anything about it at all. But just recently, the, you know, playoff finals last year, I know there's a couple of issues in the Southern League ones and issues here and there. And I think there was even one, was it the Dulwich Hamlet one or somebody, it's the same like that. I think it was a few years back, and it was on a stream as well, behind the back of one of the goals in the playoff final. And it, you know, is that becoming a bit of a concern then for you in non-league football?
Yes, it is. Yeah, be quite blunt about it. I think the FA's launched its campaign Enough is Enough, because whilst it is still a relatively small percentage of individuals, there is no place for abuse on or off the pitch in football. You know, we want to create an environment where people can play the game in safety, watch the game in safety, and we want referees to be treated with respect and dignity. people are very quick to complain when there isn't a referee. For some of the behaviours towards our match officials are totally unacceptable.
I agree with that, Lawrence. We had this conversation last week, and I don't know if you listened. And again, I'm not speaking to you because you're with the FA, because it's completely different. But I was saying, I personally don't think the referees are looked after well enough by the FA either. I think they're left on their own. You know, we mentioned body cams, etc. At steps one to four, even, yep, there's a bit more. I'd say they're looked after, but the actual grassroots football from your kids up even to step six and seven, when you've got adults that are, what's the best way of me putting this? And there's going to be some six or seven teams going to maybe come and shoot me, but you could say a little bit more social football. I think that's the word I'm looking for. I think I'm pretty good there, Dave. That are getting a little bit more aggressive. I just think that the FA are good. They come up with some great ideas, and you just need another campaign, this and that. But sometimes words isn't enough. Not with something so serious. When you come into violence, telling someone to stop doing it is different than punishing them severely when they do. And especially with referees, we had it last week, so it's quite a good follow on. I just love to see the FA actually take this a step further.
Watch your space. I think we get getting to a stage now where the tolerance has got to be zero tolerance. We've got to do something to improve the environment. And it's not just about how the referee is treated on the field, it's how we look after our referees when they arrive at a game. Whether it's a local game or a National League system game, our referees made to feel welcome, valued, part of the game.
Well, this is exactly, I had this conversation last year, and Dave said, we try to do some committee thing. Me being a manager, and you walk in, and obviously a ref's there. The first thing, obviously, you don't see the referee until normally he walks into the changing room. So you don't meet him or greet him. The old people in the committee meet him, who remember when he gave a penalty against them in 1954 and cost them their £5 win bonus. So, straight away, there's always this little bit of tension. It's not how are you, but because there's no familiarity between the refs and committees. And obviously, if the assessor turns up, he comes all bulging in and he sits on the pitch with a ref and telling him what. There is no togetherness with that. There are some, but listen, there's some great refs that I've met. Keith, how are you? And I see him beforehand and you get on with, but they're left on their own. They're walking into a ground that they don't know anyone apart from two people that they're meeting. And then the first time the linesmen meet the players, he's telling them they can't wear their ripped socks and stick the tape on the right way, and he's winding them up. And it's all this hospitality. It's all this sort of hospitality. It's all this hostility. So, I think things like the match, especially, and again, we're talking a higher level. A lower level is difficult. But, I think there's just a bit better things in plan. I think referees need to be a bit more familiar with teams now. And this is what I've always said. When you get a referee that has to travel 200 miles to come to a game, for me, I think is absolutely ridiculous. And I know they say you can't have the same referees. I disagree with that. I don't think you should have the same every game or every five games. That's enough to move around. I think the familiarity will make the bonding better, if you are. And that's my opinion.
What prevents a club from, they know they've got a referee and two assistant referees. What prevents a club when a referee arrives there and two assistants, taking them to a room, give them a cup of tea, coffee, biscuits, whatever, before the game,
A lot do, if I'm honest with you, a lot do. Yeah, but there's also referees that just turn up and walk straight to the changing room and blank everyone. That's what I mean. So if there was that, just say, for instance, I know that David Square is coming down to my club and I know him well, and he's been four or five times. Listen, it doesn't matter if he goes bad decisions, but you've got that bond with them. You sort of know a lot of them anyway. Yeah. I think that helps. You've got to have familiarity. Even if, like with managers, we know most managers, no managers. You at work, most of your people. And I just think it takes the edge off. I think that's the word I'm looking for.
I absolutely with you. I mean, I had a 20-year refereeing career. So, I am totally, totally with you. I think it's, I think it's making, it's, it is incumbent on both the match officials and the clubs to make sure everybody is involved. We call it the event, if you like. Yeah, they're involved in the day. And I think that's important. Is the biggest feedback we get is that referees just don't feel valued or part of it. So it's like, if that is the case, then that's something we have to work on to support our referees and work and help the clubs, you know, address that issue. You know,
see, the thing with me, and again, it goes back to the same way. When you're at step 4, 5, 3 or whatever, you know, your referees after the game or before a game have to be separated from normally the players or that for their pre-match, that they're on their own. So again, you're putting barriers up. And I know you could say, oh, it's for their protection so they don't get abused. But if they were in there and they got abused, and this is where the zero tolerance comes in. It's always sort of separating them from us. It's the same thing. Let's go from anyone from the FA, if it comes and watches, grand grading people, they're not welcome. It's always a sort of a line because of, not of authority, but, you know, your assessor comes in and straight away there's an issue because the referee, you know, is going to be different and he talks to them different. He doesn't go in with them. And, you know, he might put, there's a couple of them that might pop in for a cup of tea, but it's always putting these barriers up. And that's the thing that I think also needs to change. And if clubs then go the other way and abuse them because they're there and they can see them, then that's when the FA have to act with that.
But we all own it, don't we?
100%.
All of us in the game. If we really care about this game, we want to create the right environment, both for players, for managers, and for referees. You know, I firmly believe that on-field behaviour starts from the dugout. If I'm honest with you. I think that's where the lead starts. Football is an emotive, passionate sport, and always will be. But there are, you know, we have to reach a point where, you know, the abuse of match officials, the abuse of players, has to stop. It has to calm down. You know, it's not just in the National League system; it's right across the whole game. You know, this isn't just about the NLS. This is about football as a whole. You know, you can't, you know, a large number of referees we now recruit are under the age of 18. Mm. You know, they're going out in front of, in some cases, quite large crowds of parents doing the under 10s, 11s, 12s, whatever. That's quite intimidating for someone under the age of 18. You know, we have a huge responsibility, and it's a game issue. We all own it. And
no, I agree.
You know, and it's like I feel very passionate about, because, you know, we've all got a role to play in a game, and what happens on the green stuff happens on the green stuff. We all know that. And the referees, you know, will deal with it in the manner they see about. But they're all constituent parts of the game. And particularly in the NLS, when we're looking to attract, you know, local supporters, families, young children, you know, that's the sort of market we're trying to attract. You want the right environment. You know, it's maybe I paint a picture of a perfect world that can't be achieved, but I think it's certainly a lot worse now than when I was refereeing 20 years ago.
Yeah, I'm trying to say when I played. I'm not too sure, to be honest. I just think social media has brought it as a more of a.
I agree totally with you.
A bigger thing with that, and like I said before, you might have had some referees that were a bit more thick-skinned and would stay and have a pint with you afterwards before all the boardrooms come in and all that, and you know. So,
social media highlights incidents to a far wider audience. Probably incidents that wouldn't have been aware of 20 years ago,
which need highlighting. Don't get me wrong. I think they do. You know, as I said before, with the body cam, with a referee, once you've got you know, video of someone doing it. And I remember the first one, Dave, when we said it was the manager at whatever it was down in the south. Is it South Central? Can't remember his name. That went doolally on the pitch. You sat there and went, wow. And then you look at him and go...
No match official, I'll probably say player event as well, but no match official should ever, ever be assaulted on a football pitch. There's no wriggle room in that. It's totally and utterly unacceptable. And whether it's youth football, whether it's adult football, everybody has a responsibility to respect our match officials.
No, 100% agree.
No, absolutely.
You know, and the sensible heads in the game, and there's lots of sensible heads, we have to take a stand on it. Does it make the game?
So what, you know, I've mentioned the video cams and that, and we've mentioned it, but for, why has it took so long? Why has it took for referees or that or social media to show them being abused and that, from the FA actually to sit there and go, right, we do need to do something serious? Well, as I said, it's mostly has been happening for a while.
I do think there's been a, it's not just in football, actually, it's across probably all walks of life, but certainly across a lot of sports. There has definitely been an upturn in unacceptable and antisocial behaviour since COVID. There's actually no doubt about that. If you talk to all the major sports, they're all saying the same thing. And
you're saying since COVID, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. As we've come out of COVID, it's been quite interesting. It's there's definitely all the data that's available with strong, you know, evidences that there has been quite an upturn in antisocial behaviour. And I think I think sport, and every sport's different, but sport in general is wanting to make a stand against it.
Mm.
Quite right then.
100%.
So I'm far more pronounced.
Do you think that's the public as well as, fans wise, as well as, abusing the referee? Do you see that, especially sort of fan, sort of not necessarily violence, but interaction? Should we use that word?
I can even think of the club I'm involved in. You know, we've had a, you know, we live in a, you know, in a very, you know, middle class part of England, and you know, it's, you know, and we have a very strong codes here, and we've had a couple of occasions when, you know, visiting parents have acted totally unacceptably in our eyes. And I think it is, you know, the data that is available and the evidence suggests that, you know, both on pitch and off the pitch, there is an upturn in, you know, unacceptable behaviour. And I think he's brought it to a head, really, to be truthful. And I think,
I had a manager talk to me, actually, and asked me to ask Anthony something just before the show started tonight, and I had to tell him that he wasn't on. And he was saying around that he felt now it's got to be a case is that some of these leagues now have got to insist that everybody has, I had the word right on the top of my head, has more sort of security inside the ground, because they're saying now, like, it's got to that sort of stage. Stewards is the word I'm looking for. They've got to have more sort of stewards inside the ground because of the fact of visiting crowds, so the crowds maybe get a little bit bigger, a bit more of antisocial behaviour inside the grounds and stuff like that.
The thing is, Dave, and I do agree, but obviously there is some rule about X amount of stewards per number of spectators anyway when you get to a certain thing. Still not going to, you know, on a Sunday morning or whatever, it's still not going to protect little Johnny who's 16 getting bashed up by a 40-year-old dad because his little boy's been, you know, not given a penalty. It's... The bigger games, that, like I said, I think at steps fours and whatever, I think that it doesn't sound bad. When it gets to, a more of a serious professional side of football, the limit, that doesn't happen as much. There is the odd occasion, you know, where a referee or something, you know, like I said, you're more passionate, but then normally there's more football people around on the pitch as managers and that to deal with that. It's when you sort of step back down the lower leagues where there is no control, there is no barrier. Even a barrier, you know, you don't get that many fans jumping over the barrier to get at people at a football game because they know, you know, it's like a trespass. It does happen, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it doesn't, but it's not as much as whereas, you know, you've just got your line where half the parents are standing on the pitch anyway. And it makes that atmosphere feel intimidating.
It can be quite a lonely place being a referee on your own in a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's we mustn't also lose sight as well. I'm a great believer in life about balance. There's, you know, the vast majority of people still know how to behave and behave properly. I thought what we are seeing, though, is that this smaller minority is becoming a bigger, smaller minority, if you like.
It's funny, we've just had a message come in, Dave, and I'll read it out because I want to follow on from this, and you'll talk about it, and this is a plus story, but this is a message we've had. It's from Simon Harwood that's come in and said, with the increased presence of negative comments on social media, how will we get our younger people to get into refereeing? Which is true.
Yeah.
Now, with that, and Simon, I'm just going to answer this. I run my son's under 15s, Kent USAR, which is quite a good level. And one of his players in his 14, I think, done his first refereeing match on Sunday to an under 12s team. And the manager wrote a letter straight after the game, email, said how good this young boy was in an intimidating circumstances with parents shouting and whatever. And he was straight to the point. He'd done his decisions. He didn't take much, you know, and he wants to get involved in refereeing as well as he plays. But you still had some of the parents having a go at him. But when the manager realised, you know, said to him, look, this is a 14-year-old kid here. This is his first ever game. He said they're completely changed. And they sort of were encouraging him. And then basically, you know, he's getting a lot of praise. Why? They're supporting him as well.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds weird, but it's turned like a negative into a positive why he was there.
Yeah,
at the beginning, it's like, why have we got this young kid into, oh, hold on a minute, we've got a duty here. And I thought it was a real, real plus. No, real plus.
It's good to hear that. That is a negative into a positive. It's really good to hear that because, you know, we've got some amazing young kids refereeing in this country. Absolutely amazing. You know, it's, I always say to people as well, remember, a referee is like a player. They're learning their trade. You know, they've got to learn to referee. And that's why people need to be far more understanding and far more tolerant. Same with a young player coming through. You know, put a player in your first inky, a young player, he's going to take a few months to get blended in, isn't he?
But then this goes back again to my thing over a year ago about referee academies that I don't think that, you know, they all should. What we do with the academies with the kids at schools, we should have for referees as well. And the FA and whatever and the counties need to spend more money on it, not just, oh, there's a chaperone that you might see and drops you an email every 10 minutes and, you know, all that's rubbish. You've got to properly get them into games, teach them. And that's what I mean. You'll grow with them. The youngsters will grow with the younger refs. So when they're older, they're familiar with them. And that thing.
I agree with that, actually. Our biggest challenge is people. We need more people to do it. It's resource. You know, we volunteers are a big challenge in football. Doesn't matter whether it's refereeing or whether it's, you know, clubs or whatever. And we need more people to help out, because I think that is the way forward.
You know what? For me, a referee's academy where they're 16 to 19, they stay on school like they're doing now. They can do a BTEC in whatever business for sport still. Yeah, might not be good enough to get into these football academies that the clubs do, but they can do that, and then they're getting paid slightly as well. They're getting, you know, moved around. I just think it's an investment.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But if, you know, it's the takeaway message for me is that, listen, our national sport, our national game, is absolutely terrific. It's wonderful, and it's really important we protect it by stemming this tide of antisocial behaviour. Mm-hmm. And as I say, we all have the responsibility of that. All of us, everyone in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing I'd like, if we can, go 360 degrees and go back, because, of course, the draw was done today for the FA Trophy. And it's quite funny, actually, when we're talking about distances, and we were talking about earlier on, because there's some whoppers in this, and some of them are really, really good. Maybe not for the clubs that are travelling, but, I mean, I would say probably the highlight of the round for me would be Heybridge Swifts versus Hereford. That was probably a great draw for Heybridge Swifts there. But there is a couple there. I'm just trying to find them if I can. There's Plymouth Parkway, who are going to Oxford City. So that's a fair old journey there. And there was a couple of others on there as well, which I can't see them now. No, I've wanted
Dartford to... got Swindon Supermarine.
That's right. Bath have got to go to Billericay, and so there's a few up there that have been that come through, but it's Bradford Park Avenue versus Farsley Celtic, Chorley versus Leek Town, Chester versus Lancaster City, Spennymoor Town versus Runcall Linnets, Southport versus Curzon Ashton, Warrington versus Guiseley, Marine versus Scarborough, Blythe Spartans versus Buxton, Darlington versus Alverton Town, AFC Flind versus Colne, Matlock Town versus Marks United, Kings Langley versus Telford, Tamworth versus Boston, Banbury United versus Stowmarket, Heybridge versus Hereford, Leamington versus Bishop Stortford, Colville Town versus Hensford Town, Chelmsford City versus Redditch United, Braintree Town versus Brackley, Leiston against Alverchurch, King's Lynn versus Hemel Hempstead, Kettering versus Gloucester, St Albans City versus Kidderminster, Peterborough Sports versus the old Wiley Fox down at Chesson, Taunton Town versus Dulwich Hamlet, another nice little journey, Hampton and Richmond Borough versus Farnborough, Tavistock versus Hungerford Town, Beaconsfield Town versus Folkestone and Victor, Uxbridge versus Dover, Hastings versus Chippenham, Ebbsfleet versus Eastbourne, Worthing versus Weymouth, Oxford versus Plymouth Parkway, Welling versus Havant and Waterlooville, Concord Rangers versus Harrow Borough, Lewis versus Bognor, Hanwall Town versus Slough, Swindon Supermarine versus Dartford, Billericay versus Bath City, and finally Tonbridge Angels versus Bracknell Town.
Some of them ain't too bad, Dave. Some of them really actually fell on each other's doorsteps, which is quite a good one. But as you go further in that now, especially now the conference north and the south seems to come in a bit more, it's you know, you're going to have to do a bit more travelling. And then when...
Oh, he's frozen a little bit there. We'll wait for him to come back. While we wait for Keith to come back, Lawrence, what effect, I know it's not necessarily your steps, but it's in steps sort of one area. What sort of effect and positivity has it been with these two, you know, mega superstars coming in at Wrexham to the FA? Have you seen a big thing there with them, especially for Wrexham itself? Because it seems to have
I think it's exploded. I think it's more localized to Wrexham, but in all honesty, David, I think it's, I mean, what is really impressive is the attendance figures in step one this season. I mean, Wrexham had 10,000 last weekend from memory.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's there's some big, every week there are some really large crowds at step one. It just shows the interest that's has been captured by the league.
Just incredible. Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I'm quite excited. I think the FA Cup, it's FA Cup this weekend. And you know, it's a terrific first round draw. Mm. There are so many, you know, EFL teams playing teams from our level of the game.
And I think that's it, isn't it? I mean, we spoke to the other day about it, and there is a lot of teams, especially even from the Southern League, that have made it into that first round.
Yeah,
you know,
and I mean, the FA Cup, isn't it? Listen, I'm, at my age, I can be absolutely biased. FA Cup is the greatest cup competition in the world.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. And it's just one of those things. I think it's just really unfortunate, isn't it? TV games. Especially for these smaller teams, you know, you look at the likes of, I'm just looking down them now, you know, the likes of Needham Market, the likes of Merthyr, you know, Colville Town.
Colville going to Charlton. I mean,
you know, fantastic. And in Alverchurch and these type of teams, that the smaller teams that don't get their game on the TV as such because they're away from home, where it would have been an absolute shoo-in if they'd have been drawn at home to those teams, they'd all been on the TV, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it's... Yeah, you can't please everybody, unfortunately. Not in a realm where there's so many good ties.
But there we go. What can we say? And Keith has disappeared, and my mouse has now decided to pack up. So it's been one of those.
That sounds like you've had enough of me now, so you're going to elbow me out.
No, we're just going to try and get Keith back. We're just going to try and get him back. I can change mouse and get him back in. But yeah, it's just one of those sort of things where it's... you know, it's just disappointing for them, I suppose, money-wise, isn't it? You know, such a small club that they could end up having those sort of games on the TV would probably make their season and maybe next season as well.
Yeah, it's what it is.
Would you like to see
spooky Halloween?
Would you like to see more non-league teams though on the TV though, Lawrence? But do you think that they should, you know, especially the sort of first round, you'd like to see those type of games on there rather than people picked up on it more than maybe like a Wrexham being on there?
Well, it's the TV companies who pick the game, so it's a difficult one. I mean, the more coverage we have for this level of the game, the better it is, of course, you know. So, you know, it goes without saying, but it's, you know, the TV companies ultimately pick the games they're going to show. It's their choice. It's not a decision for the FA.
Yeah. and say, I think it's only one of them, isn't it? If I'm right in saying that there was one side that was actually going to be on the box. South Shields, I think, was one of them that was on there.
I mean, what we must never lose sight of is that, you know, because of the revenues coming in, the FA Cup and the trophy and the Vase, the prize funds are absolutely essential to the clubs, aren't they? You know.
I mean, bringing that up, I mean, one thing, would you like to see a little bit more money taken out of the FA Cup and put into the trophy? Because I just saw that the losers only get like £1,000 if they get knocked out this time round.
Oh, Dave, the Vase is even worse.
Flip it around the other way. When you think of the number of teams that are competing in those trophies, there's a lot of money being invested into prize funds. I probably wouldn't change them. I think we made a very good change a couple of years back when we sort of had, you know, we split the prize money between winners and losers in terms of.
I think that's mostly one of the best things that's happened.
Yeah, I think that was really positive, but for me, I think it's I think what we got is, you know, it's really good. You know, there's a lot of other countries in FIFA where clubs that are high level competition don't get that luxury. So I think we've called it about right. If I'm very truthful with you.
Okay, so last question for you then, sir. What's the pick of the ties for the first round for you?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I was looking at the list actually, and I mean Bracknell, Ipswich, Charlton, Colville. I mean, I'm sure Colville will be on their guard if it goes into 96-97 minutes. I think South Shields, Forest Green.
They could cause an upset there, I think.
Yeah, neat. I can't remember where Needham Market are. I know they're away, aren't they? But I can't remember.
They go to Burton Albion.
Burton Albion. I mean, yeah. I think going through the some years it can be a bit. It can be quite thin pickings on sort of teams from our level of competition playing EFL clubs. First round this year, there's a large number of ties, isn't there? You know.
I mean, the other one that sort of looks a bit. Could be like a bit of a banana skin as well. He's Milton Keynes Dons versus Taunton.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, don't rule out Weymouth against Wimbledon either, because wait, that will be a good crowd down there. That will be an interesting game. I think it's, you know, we talk about the magic of the cup. I think the first round this year really captivates it for me. I think it's a really exciting first round.
So, are we at a game of the weekend?
I'm with my club. We're at home to Spalding.
Uh-huh. Keith, where are you?
Don't know yet. Watch the space.
All right, okay. Yeah. Yeah. They had a glint in his eye there. So that.
We're at home to Spalding on Saturday, so I shall be.
Well, I shall be at Enfield Town against Hastings.
Oh, that'd be good.
Nice. I may actually go tomorrow, Dave, Dartford Welling, which is the derby that was postponed for the Queen's, obviously, when she died over the weekend. And that's a big derby where I am.
That'd be a good game, that, Will.
Both are flying. A lot of ex-Dartford players at Welling.
Yeah, that'd be a good game. Well, I mean, summed it up, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know. You heard what I said at the Southern League dinner, David. I mean, we are so privileged and lucky to have this level of football in our country. And, you know, the National League system clubs are simply amazing. They really are amazing. The work that's put into these clubs at every step of the National League system by so many volunteers to provide a really high quality experience in the main, you know, it's phenomenal. Mm. And, we will look in the years to come to, you know, make it stronger and stronger. And I think National League system is as I say, the golden nugget of English football.
No, absolutely, and I think that's the perfect way to finish tonight. And listen, Lawrence, it's always an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And thank you very, very much indeed. Right. And hopefully we'll speak again very soon. And of course, to Keith as well, thank you very much for joining us as well this week. And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time, because I'm actually got to work next Monday night, but we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with the show in a fortnight's time. But until
then, thanks, Keith. Great to be with you tonight. Keith,
and of course, from the legend, Lawrence Jones, we'll speak to you very, very soon.
Take care, guys. Nice to speak to you.